Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Odessa American. Crane getting new school zone. Existing school zone on Highway 329 to see changes as well. Crane will get a new school zone on Highway 385 in the next 2 weeks, and the existing school zone on Highway 329 will see improvements as well, a Texas Department of Transportation press release detailed. Work is reportedly currently scheduled to be complete by October 8th. The new school zone will be installed between 7th Street and 11th Street, the press release stated. The speed limit of the new school zone will be 20 miles per hour while lights are flashing. The Highway 329 school zone will reportedly be extended approximately 825 feet to the west and will begin just east of South Catherine Street. The speed limit in the Highway 329 school zone will also be reduced to 20 miles per hour when lights are flashing. Motorists are asked to always obey traffic rules, especially in school zones where pedestrian traffic is heavy at peak times. Official says New Mexico ranchers capture Midland homicide suspect. The Associated Press, Roswell, New Mexico. A manhunt for a Texas homicide suspect ended Tuesday in rural southeastern New Mexico when ranchers detained the man at gunpoint and handed him over to sheriff's deputies, a sheriff's official said. Keon Devon Lewis, 29, of Midland, was found about 30 miles north of Roswell, in an area where officers had searched for Lewis late Monday after he abandoned his vehicle, officials said. A couple ranchers had him at gunpoint, Chavez County Undersheriff Charles Yeslas told the Roswell Daily Record. Lewis had a weapon on him when captured, but nobody was injured, Yeslas said. An arrest warrant was issued for Lewis in connection with a double shooting in which a woman was killed in her Midland apartment and a man was wounded, KOSA-TV reported. Lewis was turned over to New Mexico State Police. That agency confirmed the capture, but did not immediately release additional information. Texas Rangers' pursuit of Lewis had crossed over into New Mexico on Monday, prompting closure of 12 miles of U.S. 285 north of Roswell as authorities searched for Lewis after he abandoned his vehicle and fled on foot. The highway was reopened early Tuesday morning. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, vaccine mandates convert some workers, by May Anderson and David Koenig, AP Business Writers, New York. Businesses that have announced vaccine mandates say some workers who had been on the fence have since gotten inoculated against COVID-19, but many holdouts remain, a likely sign of what is to come once a federal mandate goes into effect. Even before President Joe Biden's September 9th announcement that companies with more than 100 workers would have to require vaccinations, dozens of companies, including Amtrak, Microsoft, United Airlines, and Disney, issued ultimatums to most workers, and smaller companies in New York, San Francisco, and New Orleans have been required to implement mandates for customers and workers. Some mandates seem to have converted hesitant workers. United Airlines said 97% of its workers have been vaccinated even before its deadline took effect Monday. But employers are still dealing with holdouts. Alternatives for those employees include weekly testing, working remotely or away from other staff, or ultimately termination. The federal mandate will cover as many as 100 million Americans, private sector employees, as well as healthcare workers and federal contractors. It is a high-stakes gambit by the president to boost the vaccination rate in the U.S. About 77% of American adults have had one dose of the vaccine, according to the CDC. Akash Kapoor, founder of the Curry Up Now Indian restaurant chain, implemented a vaccination requirement for employees and customers of his location in downtown San Francisco in August. Kapoor said more than 90% of his employees are vaccinated, with one or two per store refusing. He's making unvaccinated workers get tested twice a week. Alejandra Segura, 28, a senior learning and development coordinator at Curry Up Now, said she was worried about having a bad reaction to the vaccine, so she held off. But the chain's vaccination mandate spurred her into action, and she received her first dose of the Pfizer vaccine on September 20th. "It's a good thing we're required to get the vaccine to ensure people's safety," Segura said. The experience says these mandates do move the needle quite a bit on employees' willingness to get vaccinated, said Laura Boudreau, an assistant professor at Columbia University who studies labor issues. She believes that only a tiny fraction of employees will quit, likely those already close to retirement and who strongly distrust vaccines. The Biden administration has said that companies will face $13,600 fines per violation, and mandatory weekly testing will be the alternative to being vaccinated. The question of whether employers or the government will pay for mandatory tests has yet to be answered. Regulations from the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, the office charged with implementing the mandate, will be drafted over the next few weeks. Meanwhile, COVID-19 cases are surging in the U.S. The seven-day average COVID-19 deaths climbed above the 2,000 threshold last week for the first time since March. And this week, a number of state deadlines arrive for healthcare workers to get vaccinated, raising fears of worsening staff shortages in hospitals and nursing homes if some opt to quit or get fired or suspended.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. Food seminar more important than ever. Valerie Acosta. Former Olympian and physician Dr. Scott Stoll will be back in Midland via our computer screens for the fifth annual Food is Medicine seminar. He will be joined with some of the nation's most recognized doctors, researchers, and scientists who have made sharing the power of nutrition in preventing and reversing many common diseases their life's passion. The two-day seminar put on by Healthy City, a local nonprofit, will run Friday and Saturday through a virtual conference platform. During the 2 days, attendees will hear from Cyrus Kambata, Ph.D., Michael Clapper, M.D., William Lee, M.D., Jim Loomis, M.D., Reshma Shah, M.D., Saray Stankic, M.D., and Scott Stoll, M.D. Topics will range from strength and conditioning, cancer, autoimmune disease, pediatric nutrition, sleep and stress, diabetes, and gut health. Dr. Stoll has been an integral part of our local Food is Medicine movement, Healthy City Board President Marcy Madrid said. He has played an important role in helping us make Midland the healthiest city in Texas since our inception. Even when Food is Medicine fell victim to the pandemic in 2020, like many area events, Dr. Stoll was the first to take his presentation virtual. He knew that the message provided during the one-day seminar could impact many lives. The other presenters agreed. Each presenter took their turn throughout the rest of 2020, presenting their scientific findings of the power of whole food, plant-based eating. The message of food's impact on health is more important than ever, with the recent studies of the impact nutrition has played in protection from COVID-19. A recent study revealed that eating a plant-based diet rich in whole foods can help protect against COVID-19. The results showed that those eating a high-quality, healthy vegan diet were both less likely to catch the virus and less likely to be hospitalized with it. The data was a collaboration between Harvard Medical School and King's College London. They gathered data from almost 600,000 individuals. Another study that investigated healthcare workers across six countries who had substantial exposure to the COVID-19 virus showed that those on a plant-based diet had a 73% lower odds of developing moderate to severe COVID-19 severity. Those following low-carbohydrate, high-protein diets had greater odds of moderate to severe COVID-19. We know that nutrition plays a key role in preventing disease, said Madrid. So to see studies of the extra protection those on a whole food, plant-based diet has just reassured us that our mission in spreading this message is more important now than ever. Healthy City wants to share that message with as many people as possible. The pandemic has created an opportunity for Healthy City's reach to stretch beyond West Texas and the Southwest. Currently, registrations stretch from Iowa to Oregon. We hope that our virtual program this year encourages our out-of-state attendees to consider making the trek to Midland when we offer the conference in person again, Madrid said. You won't want to miss this two-day event. The conference will offer networking opportunities as well as an expo area. The 8 presentations will be available to attendees for a replay through Sunday. You can register at www.ourhealthycity.com/FIM. A special thank you to this year's presenting partner, Midland Health, main stage sponsors, Abel Hanger Foundation, Bryant Family Foundation, and West Texas National Bank, and networking sponsors, Frost and Henry Resources. MMH, Elective Surgeries Taking Place, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health officials have opened up elective inpatient surgeries. Midland Health Chief Operating Officer Stephen Bowerman said Tuesday that increased COVID inpatient totals force the deferment of elective surgeries for about 6 weeks. He also said just because a surgery is considered elective does not mean that it is unnecessary. If you put an elective surgery off, it's a good time to reach back out to your surgeon, Bowerman said. We'll get you scheduled, get you back in the hospital, and get your surgery performed. Bowerman also talked about COVID trends. In particular, he said the number of COVID cases fell from the mid-60s last week to 55 on Tuesday morning. That includes 31 active cases. Other things to know from the Tuesday press conference include the age range of COVID patients at MMH is 3 to 89. 87% of the COVID inpatients inside MMH are unvaccinated. There were 7 breakthrough cases, according to Bowerman. By vaccine, that was 5 Pfizer, 1 Moderna, and 1 J&J. 27% of the COVID patients are from outside of Midland County, a higher percentage than past weeks, although the vast majority of those are from the Permian Basin, Bowerman said. He said those patients come from cities such as Odessa, Kermit, Stanton, Big Spring, and Coahoma. There are 35 COVID-related deaths in Midland Memorial in September, up from 30 in August. The vaccination rate of population-eligible people inside Midland County is 45.8%, which is below the state average of 61.3%, Bowerman said. 11 inpatients are on ventilators. Midland Health has opened a mass vaccination booster clinic from 2 to 4:30 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays at the F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center, formerly West Campus. They can handle around 350 people each day, and walk-ins are welcome, Bowerman said. Those wanting to schedule a time for a booster or a first or second shot can call 221-4-VAX or go to midlandhealth.org/schedule-my-vaccine. Anyone with questions about their health and possible issues with COVID can call 68 Nurse to schedule an appointment for a free test. Pandemic Creates Cycle of Decline, by Aaron Blakemore, Washington Post. Exercise, known to help lift moods and counter symptoms of stress, depression, and anxiety, could help, but it can get hard to get moving. A study in the journal Preventive Medicine Reports lays the blame not on laziness or lack of motivation, but a cycle created and perpetuated by the pandemic. Research conducted at North Carolina State University identifies a pattern that's all too familiar and suggests it's a broad-scale public health problem. The researchers used self-reported data from surveys collected between April and September 2020. Adult participants from five states were asked questions about demographics, health conditions, and health behaviors. They were asked to estimate how much activity they got before the pandemic and during, and identify their level of psychological distress before the pandemic and at the time of the survey. After controlling for a variety of factors, the researchers found a relationship between physical activity and mental health. Those who experienced an increase in distress reduced their physical activity. This led to increased distress and even less physical activity. People with higher incomes had a better mental health status overall. Those with lower incomes weren't as likely to maintain the activity levels they had at the beginning of the pandemic. Individuals who earned $50,000 a year or less were nearly 112 times less likely to maintain their activity levels compared to their wealthier counterparts. Asian American participants reported higher distress during the pandemic, a shift the researchers say could relate to an increase in anti-Asian racism and bias. Rural participants reported a smaller increase in distress, probably because they had more access to outdoor spaces during stay-at-home orders. The researchers say changes are needed to make activity and open spaces more accessible to all. COVID-19 presents a robust research agenda for the future, including examining the impacts of residential density and the health impacts of walkable communities with equitable access to parks, playgrounds, bike trails, and sidewalks, the study says. And the researchers say support is needed for people with mental health problems so they can get the physical activity they need to prevent further deterioration of their health. Once you get on this roller coaster ride, it's hard to get off, says Lindsay Haynes-Maslow, who co-wrote the study.
24 million Americans age 40 or older deal with cataracts, by Linda Searing, Washington Post. Cataracts, an eye affliction that commonly develops as people age, affects today more than 24 million Americans 40 and older, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The National Eye Institute says that number will reach 50 million over the next three decades. The lens of the eye, which is responsible for bending light rays, called refraction, to produce focused vision, is normally clear. A cataract, however, causes it to become cloudy. Cataract development usually starts in middle age, when proteins in the lens break down and clump together, creating a cataract that may, over time, increase in size. Symptoms are usually mild early on, but as cataracts grow, they can make vision blurry, hazy, and less colorful. It would be like looking through a foggy or dusty car windshield, according to the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Seeing at night may become difficult, with lights looking as though there is a halo around them. Eyes with cataracts may also become sensitive to bright light, whether from the sun, lamps, or headlights. Although vision problems caused by cataracts may take years to develop, eventually, they can affect reading, driving, and other daily activities. Getting rid of a cataract requires surgery, almost always outpatient. Here are more stories from the Health and Wellness section from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Over 1.2 billion people suffer from hypertension, by Linda Searing, The Washington Post. Worldwide, more than 1.2 billion people were living with high blood pressure, hypertension, as of 2019, a number that has doubled in the past 30 years, according to a large international study published in the journal The Lancet. Based on data from 1,201 studies involving 104 million people in 184 countries, the researchers projected that 652 million men and 626 million women have hypertension. Nearly half of them are unaware of their condition, and more than half are not being treated. Although treatment and control of hypertension has improved in many countries, including the United States, about 45% of U.S. adults have hypertension or are taking medication to control it, and only one in four adults with hypertension has the condition under control, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Hypertension is considered a silent killer. Though it rarely has symptoms, the condition can cause serious, even life-threatening health issues. These include heart attack, stroke, heart failure, and kidney failure. Your blood pressure, designated by two numbers, represents the force of your blood pushing against the walls of your arteries. The first number, called the systolic pressure, indicates the pressure exerted when the heart beats, pumping blood from the heart into the arteries. The second number, called the diastolic pressure, indicates the pressure when the heart is at rest between beats. A reading for normal blood pressure would have a first number of less than 120 and a second number of less than 80. High blood pressure is considered to be a reading of 140 or higher, followed by a 90 or higher. Treating high blood pressure usually begins with lifestyle changes, such as healthier eating, more exercise, and losing weight. But medication may be prescribed if lifestyle changes do not get your blood pressure under control. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Surgery to fix torn meniscus? Dear Dr. Roach, does surgery really fix a torn meniscus? Does anything for that matter? Answer. The menisci are structures resembling a donut that's been cut in half and stuck onto the tibia, or shin bone. The hole is positioned at the femoral condyles, the round parts of the thigh bone. The menisci provide shock absorption and stability to the joint. In young people, the menisci are usually torn by substantial trauma, especially by landing on the leg in an unfavorable way, often with a twisting movement, so the knee, not the muscles, takes the blow. However, in older people, and I am sad to say that older in this context means over 50 on average, the menisci can tear just from degeneration without any extreme trauma. The usual initial treatment for a torn meniscus is conservative. Rest, ice, elevation, followed by gradual strengthening of the knee, ideally supervised by a physical therapist. Most people do well with 3 to 6 weeks of physical therapy. However, some people, especially those with greater trauma, acute onset of symptoms, and more extreme initial physical limitations, continue to have symptoms despite therapy. In these cases, surgery can improve function and relieve pain. Surgery does not fix the tear, but 90% of people treated surgically for an acute traumatic meniscal tear have a good outcome. The results are not as good with degenerative tears.
This is the Dear Abby column. Filth threatens early end to rekindled relationship. Dear Abby, I recently got back in touch with an old flame from 12 years ago. We never dated in the past because he was an alcoholic and not in a good place. A month ago, he added me on Snapchat and we picked up right where we left off. He has been sober for 3 years, has a steady job, a house, and a good support system. We spent hours on the phone and have a lot in common. I was excited to see if our friendship would evolve into something more, and he also wanted to see if we could be more than friends. Abby, I went over to his house, and it is filthy. It's not cluttered, just dirty, like it needs a very good deep cleaning. He has a large dog in the house, so the place smells very bad. I wouldn't sit down on any of the furniture, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. What do I do? Do I tell him how I feel about his house and see if he's willing to change? Or must I end the relationship we are starting to build? I don't want to settle, but I don't want to miss out on what could turn into a wonderful relationship. Signed, Put Off in Iowa. Dear Put Off, it is entirely possible that this man doesn't realize how dirty his home, furniture, and dog have become, because he is used to living that way. You have no choice but to tell him he needs a cleaning crew for his home on a regular basis, and his dog needs to be bathed and groomed regularly for the sake of the health of the animal. If he's willing to listen to you, it could turn into a wonderful relationship. If he isn't, it's better to find out now, don't you think? Dear Abby, I recently began talking to this woman online. We met on an app and have a lot in common, including that our fathers have had or currently have cancer. One night we got into a discussion about depression. I mentioned in the past that I have been suicidal, and she admitted she has felt that way too. She tells me she thinks about ending her life a lot. I've told her about suicide hotlines and numbers to text someone. The other night, she said she had started writing her suicide note. She wants to die after her father and her cats die. I'm trying to help her, but it's like she doesn't want my help. She has my number, and I urge her to text me whenever she needs to. We don't live close, so I can't just go to her house and check on her. If she does take her life, I don't know how I could go on, feeling I didn't do more to help her. I don't know what to do anymore. Signed, Don't Know What to Do. Dear Don't Know, you have given this woman a willing ear, emotional support, and information that can help her if she chooses to use it. You have nothing to feel guilty about. In the final analysis, the person who must save her is herself. Continue to offer support from afar. Give her the toll-free number of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. Your conscience should be clear. For your own sake, please keep it that way. You could write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.